AirVenture opens a grass field. Contract towers are safe and cost-effective. And Minnesota Supreme Court stands with Cirrus on a fatal crash. This is Aero News for Friday, July 20th, 2012. I'm Glenn Moyer. Got a tail dragger or other antique or historic aircraft? Then this is certainly welcome news from Oshkosh. Final approval from the FAA's Airport District Office in Minnesota will allow a temporary grass runway to be used by special aircraft during EAA's AirVenture this year. Working together, Whitman Regional Airport Management, the Vintage Aircraft Association, and EAA staff have been able to reestablish this strip to allow pilots of unique and historic aircraft to bring them to the annual fly-in without the fear of having to land on pavement. Now, because of the configuration of the airport and this grass strip, there are a number of preconditions and precautions to be met before you touch down on the turf. For example, only landings to the north are allowed. You must obtain, and I presume read and understand, a copy of the special approach procedure. You're invited to drop an email to the Vintage Aircraft Association at least a day in advance to tell them you're coming. Then you'll need to phone the tower about an hour out, and then you must have radio contact with the field's south tower. You must be completely familiar with the AirVenture NOTAM, and finally, to keep winds or traffic from becoming a factor, early morning arrivals are recommended. As we reported earlier this week, the Subcommittee on Aviation, chaired by U.S. Representative Tom Petrie, a Republican of Wisconsin, held a hearing on Wednesday as the Department of Transportation's Inspector General continues its most recent audit of the Contract Tower Program. The Contract Tower Program has been in existence for almost 30 years. Currently, 250 airports in over 45 states participate in the program. Contract towers handle approximately 28% of all air traffic control tower aircraft operations in the United States, but account for just 14% of the FAA's overall tower operations budget. Overall, the IG's findings support an earlier review in 2003 that found contract towers to be cost-effective and at least as safe as FAA staff towers. In a comparison of 30 similar towers, the IG found operations cost for a contract tower now at just over $533,000, while a comparable FAA tower had cost of just over $2 million, a savings of almost $1.5 million for the contractors. The report also showed that 99% of contract controllers are ex-military or ex-FAA controllers with an average of 20 years' experience, all of whom are certified by the FAA. Despite the glowing report, Calvin Scovell, the Inspector General of the Department of Transportation, says there are opportunities for the FAA to improve the program, saying, quote, "These opportunities include implementing a voluntary safety incident reporting program at contract towers, implementing policies that require contract towers to receive regular safety reviews, and improving agency oversight over the contractual aspects of the program," end quote. The Minnesota Supreme Court has handed down a ruling favorable to Cirrus Aircraft stemming from a 2003 accident which fatally injured a pilot and his passenger, both from Grand Rapids, Michigan. In the ruling, the state high court said that the company is not required by law to teach people who buy its airplanes how to fly them. The accident fatality injured pilot Gary Prokop and his passenger James Kosak. The families of the two men had filed the suit, claiming that Cirrus did not provide adequate pilot training to Prokop. The FAA does not require manufacturers to offer flight training. However, Cirrus does offer a 2 to 3 day program to assist pilots in the transition into their new aircraft. The training is conducted by the University of North Dakota's Aerospace Foundation. Prokop, however, did not receive that training prior to his accident. A lower court had originally found in favor of the families and awarded them $16.4 million. An appeals court overturned that ruling in 2011, and now the state Supreme Court has upheld the decision. Well, NASA completed another successful test Wednesday of the Orion crew vehicle's parachutes high above the Arizona desert in preparation for the spacecraft's orbital flight test in 2014. A C-17 plane dropped a test version of Orion from an altitude of 25,000 feet above the U.S. Army Yuma Proving Ground in southwest Arizona. This test was the second to use an Orion craft that mimics the full size and shape of the spacecraft. Orion parachutes have so-called reefing lines, which, when cut by a pyrotechnic device, allow the parachute to open gradually, managing the initial amount of drag and force on the parachute. The main objective of this latest drop test was to determine how the entire system would respond if one of those reefing lines was cut prematurely, causing the three main parachutes to inflate too quickly. The Homeland Security Subcommittee on Oversight, Investigations, and Management, chaired by Representative Michael McCaul, a Republican of Texas, held a hearing Thursday entitled, quote, "Using Unmanned Aerial Systems Within the Homeland, Security Game Changer?" end quote, on Capitol Hill. Well, according to a committee news release, unmanned aerial systems have enhanced the surveillance capabilities for military operations abroad and have increasingly been used for homeland security. As of June 2012, the Federal Aviation Administration has authorized nearly 60 private and government entities to operate UASs in domestic airspace. Chairman McCaul said in a statement that the hearing was called to examine the benefits and challenges to increased domestic use of unmanned aerial systems. Well, the largest single objection to the use of these aircraft is the potential for the invasion of privacy, especially in light of technology that will now allow drones to operate undetected for up to 48 hours, with expectations that may soon be expanded into days, weeks, even months. With that technology, the potential for invasion of privacy grows exponentially. When Aero News continues, a night at the museum, NASA style. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum, and graduation week for the next generation of Tuskegee Airmen.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Aero News continues now for Friday, July 20th. I'm Glenn Moyer. After many months of intensive planning, the first steps have been put in motion to move NASA's first shuttle crew compartment trainer from Johnson Space Center to the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force. CCT-1, which was one of three trainers built to train astronauts for space missions, is scheduled to arrive at the museum, which is located at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio, later this summer. For more than 30 years, CCT-1 was housed in Johnson Space Center's Space Vehicle Mock-up Facility in Houston. It was used to train crews from STS-1 through STS-135. Moving the CCT-1 is proving to be almost as complicated as going to the moon. The simulator was never meant to be moved when it was built, so first it has to be gutted and all of the interior equipment shipped separately. Then the whole thing will be shrink-wrapped. Just getting it onto a trailer to move it to Ellington Air Force Base requires the construction of a special adapter, where it will then be flown to Ohio on board a NASA Guppy. And all of the moves, on the ground at least, must be done in the middle of the night to avoid traffic issues. Well, a big part of the week at AirVenture are the many educational forums presented, and here's a quick note of a few that we've been made aware of. Gamma has partnered with the IMC Club to host instrument proficiency forums at Oshkosh. The forums at AirVenture will focus on improving instrument proficiency through organized discussion of experiences that pilots may encounter in instrument flight. Each seminar will be introduced by either National Transportation Safety Board member Earl Wiener or member Mark Rosekind. Ken Walter, the Great Lakes Regional Director of the Balloon Federation of America, will present an informational forum on the sport of hot air ballooning for those seeking a lighter fare during the week. Officials at Avemco will be presenting a variety of forums, including the Top 10 Aviation Insurance Myths. Jim Lauerman will make that presentation, not to be confused with David Letterman. And whole airplane parachute manufacturer BRS Aerospace will present a forum with two pilots who used the remarkable product and credit it with saving their lives. BRS will also have a simulator equipped with an actual activation handle to give visitors a realistic experience of pulling that parachute. Additionally, the BRS booth will feature a Redbird Flight Simulations full motion simulator, which has been programmed to demonstrate the entire deployment sequence. So many forums, so little time. Sikorsky and the U.S. Army celebrated the delivery of the 500th H-60M Black Hawk helicopter Wednesday. The deliveries to date comprise 400 UH-60M utility and 100 HH-60M medevac aircraft, the latter used exclusively as an air ambulance by the U.S. Army to rush wounded soldiers to field hospitals. Saturday is a special day for a group of special students. Tuskegee University is helping the next generation of pilots through a new nonprofit program aimed at helping at-risk youth through aviation education. Saturday, the first class of students will graduate from the academy in a ceremony following a groundbreaking for new hangars at Golden Eagle Aviation in Tuskegee, Alabama. The academy is a collaborative effort of the university, the Chicago chapter of Tuskegee Airmen, Golden Eagle Aviation, and the National Park Service. Founded by U.S. Air Force Captain Kenyatta Ruffin, the Legacy Flight Academy is a two-week training program for teens aged 16 to 19. The program combines flight training and mentoring to encourage more minorities to pursue aviation careers. Located at historic Moton Field, the site where the renowned Tuskegee Airmen trained, the academy teaches the teens some of the skills necessary to become private pilots. The students also live and study on the campus of Tuskegee University during some of their training. The young people got lessons on flight basics and physics, as well as the use of the flight simulator by the university's aerospace engineering department. Those of you lucky enough to be in Oshkosh next week will have the opportunity to meet some of the original, real Tuskegee Airmen as they are honored there. A special showing of the movie Red Tails is also planned. You know, it just doesn't get any better than a Warbird movie under the stars, surrounded by a bunch of pilots in the middle of an airfield. Now that's a field of dreams. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Glenn Moyer, and you're now cleared for departure.